You're listening to a Radio 1 podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Every week on Mastermind 2023, the Women Leaders Special, powered by Nucleus Office Parks. Our main man, Rishi K, introduces you to some dynamic ladies who power their companies. And you're with our guest of the week. 94.3, Radio 1. One World, your station.
Welcome to Mastermind 2023, the Women Leaders Special powered by Nucleus Office Parks. My name is Rishi K. The core idea is to interview dynamic ladies who power their companies, handling crucial roles, driving growth, as well as value for employees and partners. We're going to cover CEOs, marketing heads, HR heads, IT heads, group sales heads, corporate communication heads, CSR leaders, as well as strategy leads. But the caveat is, all of them have to be ladies. There's never been a better time than now for gender diversity and inclusion in India, Inc. And ladies, like the ladies we are covering, are at the forefront of this change and movement. Normally, I only say singer-songwriter, music composer, but this is one with a difference, and I'm really excited for this. Ananya Birla, founder Swatantra Microfin Private Limited. The organization makes small loans to women entrepreneurs based in rural India. They maintained a quality loan portfolio, offering one of the lowest interest rates in the country. She's also founder CEO of Ikai Asai, an inventory-based global luxury e-commerce platform. She launched the Ananya Birla Foundation in 2020 with a COVID-19 relief project that involved providing menstruation kits, PPE kits, protective equipment to men, to women and hospitals across Maharashtra. The foundation also worked in providing essentials to migrant workers during the pandemic. She's co-founder and vice chairperson, Empower, the mental health initiative, and director at Aditya Birla Management Corporation Private Limited. Wonderful to see you.
It's always nice to see you, and this is in the other avatar of mine, so I'm extremely happy to be here.
And thank you for saying yes, you know, because I know music is such a primary passion for you that I just have to mention it and you say yes, but I wasn't quite sure. I said, does she want to talk about her businesses or not? But I know that your love for Radio 1 brought you here.
I love Radio 1 for multiple reasons. One, you guys are amazing. I say this in every interview with you guys, is that Radio 1 supported me when no one else did, very, very initially. I'll always remember that no matter what. So big thank you, genuinely.
Yeah, and you'd be pleased to know that one of our focus areas from here on is to do more business. Because we realize that all radio stations are only talking entertainment and playing music. The Bollywood guys are playing Bollywood, playing music. We are playing English, we're talking music, which is a great thing. But there's a huge lacuna for something like a CNBC TV 18 to happen on radio.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a couple of us are really passionate about entrepreneurship and business. We understand business. And we said, you know, now's the time to actually try and do more business content.
Absolutely. You know, I think, of course, I would say yes, because it's the other half of what I love. I don't talk about it very often because maybe I feel like it's too close to home, maybe. But I've realized that the more I talk about it and the response I get from people, it seems like they want to know more about it. And so thanks to all of you, I feel like I should talk about my work in the business space more. And also in 2024, we're launching a couple of really cool, hopefully, really cool consumer brands. So I'm super excited about that as well.
Lovely. Okay, I'm going to start at the top.
Yes.
Why did you pick microfinance as your first venture?
Okay, so I was 17. I was in American school and I was beginning to homeschool because I wanted to try to get into Oxford at that time and do my A-levels, which I didn't know which school was providing. We had like a microfinance club. I remember coming back home and telling mom, I want to start a microfinance company. I think it came from two places. One is this innate guilt that I have of being born in privilege. And how can I possibly contribute to financial inclusion in our country? That's number one. And number two is that many, many women around me, right, I personally felt like were unable to stand up to society or make their own decisions because they were not financially independent or financially self-sustainable. And so I decided that I wanted to be a part of that journey for other women. And that's exactly what we do at Swatantra. So when people say, oh, yeah, it's a CSR initiative, well, it's not, because it's just, we're just providing them with a product in an inbuilt service, the product that a bank is unable to provide because they don't have a physical collateral to give us. So we're still just giving them a loan. They have to repay the loan with principal and interest. So they're doing all the work themselves. All we are doing is providing a product that a bank may not provide. So it's like banking the unbanked is what we do as Swatantra. So from starting, I remember the first loan we gave of 10,000 rupees to now being the second largest in the country with a portfolio of, we'll touch about 25,000 crores. It's been a lovely, lovely, lovely journey full of ups and downs. I feel like Swatantra has made me Swatantra in many ways. I have a great team. You know, they're more like family now to me. So it's been a beautiful journey.
You know, I'm very fascinated by mergers and acquisitions also because we were part of a big merger.
Yeah, yeah.
If you know, just around the pandemic, we were acquired by Hindustan Times.
Yeah.
Big change for us. We were a part of a smaller group. We were part of the Midday. Our promoter at the time decided to, you know, sell his stake, opt out. Mm. It involved moving to this particular building where we sit now, new office, new space, sharing a few resources because that's what mergers and acquisitions are. I mean, a promoter will buy you only so he can cross-pollinate stuff.
Synergies.
And, yeah, synergies. So I saw it firsthand, at least in my business, which is the radio business. And now everybody's been talking about your recent acquisition of Chaitanya FinCredit, which obviously you did because you wanted to propel Swatantra, which is your first venture, to become bigger and larger. And I'm given to understand that this will make it the second largest microfinance organization in India.
Yeah.
So why Chaitanya? Why the timing? Why now? Yeah. Talk about that.
So the microfinance industry or the NBFC space, you know, in that category has never seen this sort of a transaction, an acquisition before. So, of course, it's a huge risk. I remember my MD coming up to me and saying that, you know, there's this opportunity for Chaitanya and it's completely confidential. I said, you know, I went through a couple of papers and it just made sense. It was expensive. It was 1,479 crores, which is a lot of money. But what we were getting was multifold. One is the processes that Chaitanya has are probably the best in the industry. So in terms of NPAs, in terms of discipline on field, in terms of pure microfinance, pure lending, they are probably the best. For them, timing worked as well because their AUM was, their GLP was sort of, the growth kicked in after the COVID wave. So they were able to control the NPAs a little bit better. The team is fantastic at Chaitanya as well. Also, geographically, it made sense because, so we are all across India, at about 19 states now, and they are very concentrated in the south. And I had purposely not entered the south because back in 2010, I think, there was this whole crisis that happened in AP. Sort of the entire industry was blacklisted. So at that time itself, I said, you know, it'll be better if in the future we acquire a company that's already doing well there. So it makes a lot of sense for us for multiple reasons, as I mentioned. And most importantly, you know, I think the cultures fit together very well. Because at the Aditya Birla Group as well, we've seen so many mergers and acquisitions. Now that I'm part of the group as well and on the board of a couple of companies. And I've seen it firsthand. Of course, I've heard stories from my father as well. Culture and values of two organizations coming together, it can really make or break. It can be the smallest of things, right? Like, what do we focus on when we're at work? How much of authenticity is celebrated? How are people rewarded? What do the promoters stand for? And all of those things and our values in general just really fit in. So more than, of course, technically it's an acquisition, but I like to see it as a marriage of two individual entities that get along really well, that'll have a fantastic future together.
That is very well put. Acquisition sometimes is a very hard word.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Also, I didn't want my team at Chaitanya to feel like we're like, it's not, that's not the point. The point is that we're just coming together and we're taking on the best practices from both entities. The IT piece, for all of you IT geeks, the IT piece is a big challenge because the customer base is huge. The processes are so detailed across the board. So finding common SOPs and then integrating that through our LMS, LOS, you know, it's a little bit choosing which system to use. So right now we're like Microsoft or Google. So one side is fighting for Microsoft, one side is fighting for Google. I'm supposed to be neutral. So I'm like, you know, let's just write down the specs, see what's working and make a decision.
Yeah, you know, because if they feel they're in a collaborative partnership space, you know, it fosters work and communication.
Yeah.
The last thing you want is somebody from top management going and saying, oh, you know, we bought you.
Exactly.
Get used to our culture, you know, things like that.
But honestly, would love to talk with you more later off to understand what you think the merger that you all went through, what could have been smoother, what went off well, because then I would love to implement it within
that's the lovely. We must have a chat on that.
Yeah.
Your professional growth story, I mean, an ingredient that you think really made you who you are professionally today?
This is going to sound very strange, but the guilt that I have, it's less now, but the guilt that I had while growing up really propelled me, because I felt like I had to prove to myself that I'm worthy of being born in privilege. And that also came with, I want to build things right from scratch by myself without the support of my father or my mother or the family name to whatever extent possible, because I wanted to sleep in peace knowing that I'm feeling good about myself, feeling like I've done this on my own merit, on my own, you know. To give you a simple analogy, it's like when you write an exam, you want to study for the exam yourself and write the exam, because then when you get the marks, you feel like, oh, wow. If someone else writes the paper for you under your name, what's the fun? I mean, for other people, it's like, yeah, you have a certificate, but the knowledge is not yours. You don't feel that confidence or that purpose, you know, from within. And that was really, really important for me to have. So whether it's with my music or whether it's with my businesses, multiple times, you know, my father, of course, because he's so protective, says, no, I can call. I'm like, no, please, I don't want you to make any calls. You know, I want to go through this and do this my way. And he's proud of me for that, I guess. And I think for me, I'm not saying there's anything wrong if a father does that, because, you know, that's the point of having family. But for me, this was the right way, and this is the right way to go about doing things.
It's very beautifully put. You know, over the weekend, like I told you off the mic, I was at Nykaaland, and I had a wonderful chat with the CEO of Nyka, which is Falguni Nayyar.
Yep.
And she made a very interesting statement. She said, you know, irrespective of what category of woman you talk to, privileged or underprivileged, she will always have a gender bias story.
Mm-hmm.
And that's so true. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah.
You would think Falguni Nayyar, CEO, Ananya Birla, director Aditya Birla, would not have one, but I'm sure there must be somewhere, you know, something somewhere. So please don't name any organization, just generically speaking, gender biases, if you faced any.
I think it's something, there's no need to have like a stigma around it. It is what it is.
Yep.
So even when I'm sitting in board meetings, now I'm seeing a difference, but I used to be the only girl sitting with men in their early 40s and I was in my late 20s. So, you know, I try my level best. It's not about, it's about equal opportunity, right? So in my leadership teams, I try to keep it a 50-50 split. So at Swatantra as well, we have, you know, two men and two women right at the top. So HR, finance and operations and MD. So it's more about energies than actually gender for me.
Mm.
I think it's, you know, women are more, can be more. It's so tough for me to talk about this because, again, so being completely honest, my family has been so supportive of me that I personally have never had that struggle with my close family. So I almost feel a little hypocritical talking about it because I haven't really experienced it. They've always made me feel like my granddad used to say before he passed away that she's going to beat all the boys. And now I'm like, it's not about beating the boys. It's about having equal opportunity.
Yeah.
And so in my own way, because I see other women going through it, I try to give equal opportunity. And that's not just in terms of gender, that's in terms of when it comes to the LGBTQA plus community, that comes to diversity in terms of cultural diversity. So at Altibula Global Trading, we have people from all around the world. At Novelis, which is our aluminum, it's in Atlanta. So it's again a mix of... So in the group and in the companies I run, we make sure that diversity and inclusion are two very important aspects for our human resources in general. It really, really helps in collaboration, coming up with richer ideas. I've just seen performance improving so much more, value for shareholders go up so much more when there is that balance between all of these factors.
There is no doubt that yours is a very progressive company because, you know, from a very early stage, your mom and you were part of the think tank. You were in the board. But you still look at a lot of large companies and you suddenly see that there should be more women in boardrooms.
But you know, I'm sorry, I have to say one more thing. I have to give credit to my father and my mother because I didn't know till very recently, actually, I didn't realize that before me, no other Birla girl has, within my family tree, has ever been in family business.
Wow.
So everyone, all the girls were married by choice by the age of 22, 23. I'm the only girl who's actually completely involved in the family business, has her own businesses, and is not married out of choice. So complete credit goes to my mother and my father for that.
So what do you think the distance that women leaders need to cover to have equal presence in boardrooms? You've started doing that with your companies.
Yeah.
But I still, you know, I will go into websites of large companies and say, oh my God, I wish there was more women representation here. What needs to be done?
I think a couple of things. I think for women who are in positions of, who have a platform, positions of any sort of power, I think it's our responsibility to give equal opportunity to men and women, of course. So I tend to, I used to give more opportunity to women and I was like, no, that's not correct because, you know,
true.
So I need to be equal. So that's number one, which, you know, I'm personally trying to do. Number two is I think as women, we need to sort of come to terms with the fact that we can have a completely successful, thriving professional life and also have a very successful personal life. I think we start feeling guilty that, oh, what'll happen? I'm not married, but for example, what'll happen to the kids? What'll happen to my husband? But the fact is that they can be balanced. And it's a shift because it's a shift in gender roles, right? As we see. So obviously, as women, we start feeling a little bit guilty. Like, oh my God, are we being selfish by focusing more on our career, etc.? But the truth is that both can happen and both can happen very successfully. It's just a matter of finding that balance, which takes a little time, but we can get to it. So I think as women intrinsically, we need to know that that can be done. I think in general, large organizations, which, you know, for example, Radio 1, y'all are doing shows like this, which sort of put more light on issues of gender equality. And I think we're on the right path. And, you know, education when it comes to girl child, that's so important as well for women to have positions, high positions, or to go up ranks in corporate, is if parents are easy on the girl child and allow the girl child, and I don't like the word allow, but as a child you need consent from your parents to pursue further education and further studies. So I would really highly tell parents all around India that if you can really encourage your children, and especially a girl child, to take up whatever she may want to take up.
You think women leaders are more effective than their male counterparts, or is it just a myth? Given that a woman has such heightened levels of sensitivity, a mother, a sister, you know, those aspects. Men can never understand what it is like to be a mother, for example.
Yeah. So I think it boils down to EQ. I think what I've realized from the experience, the little experience I have, is that higher EQ levels just make for a better leader. Now, I don't think I want to generalize and say that, you know, women make better leaders. I think there are many, many men out there as well who have very, very high EQs. I feel like, you know, men are told if you cry, you're not a man and things like that. So that I really think it boils down to the individual. And a good mix of men and women at the workplace is what adds value across the board.
How do you think men and women can really complement each other at work for being more productive towards the company?
I think that's very, very important. I think so. again, it depends. But I think, so for example, in Swatantra, on the field, because it's very, very long working hours and it's in areas that are not very accessible, I prefer men taking that role just because for safety of women, which is, we live in a man's world, which we want to change, but we have to accept that we do. So certain things have to be done like that, right? But then we give women positions at the base camp, right? At location, at our branch office. And then they get more data work as well. So it really depends on things like that. Another thing is, so I have given, it's not throughout the group yet, but with the companies that I have run, I've given menstruation leave as well. We call it wellness leave, mental health leave. And so for men to, when something like that is announced, I think it's really important for men to advocate for it so their juniors or their reportees feel like it is okay to take menstrual leave. So it's about that overall acceptance. And it's just really about strengthening strengths and weakening weaknesses across. You know, in my mind, I would think, okay, maybe a man would make a better salesman because it's performance, it's pushing, it's alpha. But my CFO is fantastic at what she does. And I know that's not sales, but even across in sales as well, well, you know, you may think a man is better with numbers, right? But I have CFOs across the board who are fantastic with numbers, much better than the men, actually. And then I have, you think that a woman would be very good in HR, but I have men who are chief human resources officers across, and they are fantastic as well. So it's really funny when it comes to practical. I think it's really very individual specific.
When you look back at your entrepreneurial journey, what has been the most rewarding part thus far?
I think when I know that a product or a service is making an end consumer feel good or is impacting their lives in a positive way, that really makes me feel good. Number one. Number two, when my team says that waking up on a Monday morning is fantastic, they can't wait to work, that makes me very happy. And number three is when I know that, again, it's a team thing. I think I get a lot of I need a lot of validation from my team. They mean a lot to me. So when we get things like best place to work, great places to work, and when they're happy working at the organizations that we've built, that really, really makes me happy. So my team and my consumer.
Why is mental health so close to your heart? I mean, I can feel it each time you talk about mental health.
Yeah. Because I have had a long journey with my personal mental health. It never really, I'm not meaning this in a demotivating way for anyone, it never really goes away, but it gets much easier because you learn how to handle it. You sort of get a grip on what your triggers may be, you get a grip on what are better ways to handle your emotions and things like that. So now, at the workplace, mental fitness becomes really important, right? The last 2 weeks for me, for example, I've been, touch wood, I've been at my peak in terms of my mental fitness. And the amount of productive work I've been able to get done in shorter amounts of time without getting exhausted and feeling good has been fantastic.
Wow.
And this is a result of what? Probably good sleep, good sleep hygiene, good workout hygiene. So making sure that I walk for an hour every single day, getting fresh air, my meditation routine, having the right people around me, good social interactions, healthy boundaries. It's a multitude of different things. So yes, I can say firsthand that mental fitness makes a big, big difference at the workplace in terms of concentration. You know, you see at the workplace when someone's mental health is in check, they begin to respond and not react. And that in itself helps anybody, not just a leader, make better decisions. And what a better decision is, what a better decision means, a better outcome. A better outcome means more value for everyone around you. And so a better decision is made when you're in a better frame of mind.
What's the toughest decision you had to make in your business, your businesses? How did it impact that particular business, that decision?
It's mostly around people, I think. I think the toughest for me has been around people. And of course, those issues are completely confidential. But you know, things come up where you hear one story from someone, another story from someone else. And you're like, it's like the same situation. One person says A and one person says Z about the same situation. And then of course, you need to get a committee in to assess what happens. And then I am, of course, emotionally invested in both of those people because they're part of my team. And it's always a little, it's always tough. So those are the tougher ones. But, you know, things like acquiring Chaitanya, the risk in terms of never been done for a reason, right? It can be very volatile. It's unsecure in that sense. So, and if at scale. So even though it should have been a tough decision, I mean, it was tough, but it was quite, it was like almost like common sense because it just made sense, right? So I think people's making decisions on people and has, it's probably, the, and that's on a daily basis, right? Things happen on a daily basis.
How would you define what your leadership style is?
I think you should ask my team that. So I personally don't micromanage, but I'm very hands-on. So I look at bigger picture and I look at minute details, right? So right now we're launching a sneaker brand and I've driven my team crazy, but from each stitch matters, right? Where is the stitch? What style is the stitch? And what color is the stitch, right? Everything matters. Those details really, really make a big difference. And then I look at bigger picture. So I look at what are our sales goals? Where is it? How is it happening? What are the channels? Where is our marketing at? All of that stuff. Authenticity is something that I believe in. Transparency is something that I believe in. So we, for example, don't have, at the end of the day, you know, it's a conglomerate, it's a corporate. We don't have a dress code per se, as long as you're appropriately dressed. It's important to be appropriate, but it doesn't have to. It can be semi-formal. It doesn't have to be, probably should not come in very short shorts, but just because, you know, etiquette, and it's nice to have that. But I personally like to wear formal clothes because then I feel like I'm in that avatar. But, you know, sometimes I go like this in t-shirt and formal pants and sneakers, and that's fine. So I'm all about being authentic at the workplace. I'm all about transparency. I'm all about empowering people much younger, maybe because I'm younger. I don't believe that someone needs to have a 20-year or 25-year-long career to reach a position of CEO. If I personally see potential earlier, I think life should be enjoyed and responsibility can be taken earlier as well. I feel very lucky that I've seen the importance of processes and values and a rigid system at the group and then a more sort of agile, flexible, new age vibe at the businesses that I have started and I run. So how important it is to have a mix of both. It's really important to have those values in place, those processes in place, but how do you still remain agile, flexible, innovative, things like that. So I think that is, I don't know if I mean, I don't know what, I'm just trying to imagine what.
No, no, agile is good, dear. What you're saying is making a lot of sense. What are some of the ideas and industries that draw you, that even today you turn around and say, I want to build something upon that?
I felt like that with the footwear industry, which are launching
the sneakers.
Sneakers. Yeah. I am a brand ambassador for Maybelline New York, which is something I'm very passionate about. So cosmetics is something that, so skincare more than anything else is something that I really I'm passionate about because I'm passionate about my own skin. Let's see how it goes. I think there's a lot going on already. So from financial services to global trading to fashion, to footwear, to mutual fund and all the financial services. There's a lot of stuff going on already. So I think now the idea is to production, right? That's something that Antimatter Productions were launching very soon. It's been there, but was formally launching it. So I think now the idea is to consolidate and just to focus and go deeper within what I'm already present in.
Are there some daily habits that, I know it sounds dramatic, but help you seize the day?
So my workout is very, very important for me. I think it helps me clear my mind. I listen to podcasts. I listen to music. I sort of go through like the LinkedIn posts that I have for the week as well. And I read sometimes on the treadmill if I'm walking. So I get a lot of stuff done as well. So that is very important to me. My meditation is extremely important to me. I think it. Sometimes I feel like my brain is going to explode. Because there's so much going on and there's so many ideas and it's like, oh my God.
And then you breathe and it just
so I have to like, and just take a moment to just, you know, because it can get so overwhelming. And as soon as I get overwhelmed, it suddenly just triggers my panic. So I really have to be careful to balance that out. So it's really important for me to, so my workout, my meditation, and, you know, staying connected with my best friends, staying connected with my parents. All of that is very important as well.
Okay, some lifestyle questions. What kind of music are you listening to these days? And any recent gig or concert that you went to that you really enjoyed?
So what am I listening to? I am listening to a mix of Bob Dylan. There's a song called Ve Kamlaya, Rockier Rani.
It's nice. It's sweet. Yeah.
So like What Jhumka and all of those. So that stuff. I'm listening to Chris Brown, Under the Influence. So a mix of different things. I've been funnily listening back to a lot of my originals as well, in terms of things that are not unreleased, to try to make it better before I go into studio. I went to NCPA, the experimental theatre, and I watched a band from Pune, and it was just a really fun experience.
Do you remember what they called? I'll go check them out. It must be on the listings.
Yeah, I don't remember.
But tight band, good band.
It was just a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. It was, they were having fun. And I think
all of us in the audience
really had fun.
That's really wonderful. What kind of books do you enjoy reading, and what's a book read that you can suggest to us?
So there's a book I just read called The Silent Patient. And only read the book if you have like 2 days free, because I was hooked. I couldn't do anything else. I was hooked onto that book.
Binge reading.
I was binge reading it. So it was like in a day I was done, in a day and a half. So there's this big twist that comes in the end. I don't want to give out more. But the way that twist sets in, it's just, I cannot explain. So I highly suggest you reading that book. Other than that, I love reading, you know, self-help kind of books. But this was a good change. I really enjoyed it.
Documentary recommendations. I believe you're watching quite a few docus these days.
I watch a lot of documentaries. So this was more like a film based on a real story, but NIAID on Netflix. Oh my God, I feel so inspired. I watched it with a couple of my friends and my mother. NIAID, she is now 60. She's 60 when she attempted it, but she swam from Cuba to Florida.
Wow.
2 days, so no sleeping, just swimming. And this is with like underwater sea creatures, and so every 1 hour she would eat a little bit of pasta, and it was just, she can't touch the boat, and just fantastic in terms of, it just kind of shows you that anything is possible and you're not too old for anything. And I'm 29 now, so after watching that, I'm like, I can continue to pursue all my dreams in music till I die. And, you know, pop culture puts all of these things on us that when you're in your 20s, it's the blah, blah, blah. I mean, her fitness level, and she swam for two days.
It's unbelievable.
You have to. So I would highly recommend watching that. It really, it takes a little bit to pick up, but once it picks up, it's just very, very inspiring. It just makes you feel like you can do anything that you set your mind to.
Well, I want to just close this down by talking about your song for mental health. If I'm given to understand, it was a collaboration with Maybelline.
Yes, yes.
For which you are brand ambassador.
Yes. So they have, Maybelline has this, you know, IP called Brave Together, which is all about initiating conversation on mental health and helping other people around to equip them with the right language, so if someone comes and says, hey, I'm not feeling well, you know how to speak with them. So it's a lovely initiative, and like, you know, mental health is very close to my heart. So we have a song called Brave Together. So I, you know, we were like, why don't we just have an anthem around this? I love the song. It's almost like deep lyrics, but in a peppy, in a, you know, it's not depressed, it's not melancholic, it's upbeat. So it's called Brave Together, and the music video will be out soon as well, hopefully, fingers crossed. It's had great reception on Spotify. You know, it touched 1 million streams quite quickly. So I'm excited.
Are there ideas and industries for the future that you're really thinking about building something upon?
Yeah, you know,
like everybody's just talking about AI all the time.
So I think AI is a very integral piece, and I think for me personally, it's about how can I integrate AI in a cost-effective manner within the businesses to reduce cost and to increase productivity without compromising on manpower. because that's something I don't want to take away anyone's
that's
jobs.
Big fear that everybody
exactly.
has. Yeah.
So, for example, you know, it could be anything, right? It could be how do I want to see how these shoes look on me without. With different outfits on, will I be able to wear these sneakers underneath the ghagra? Will I be able to wear these sneakers in formal wear? And how can I see that in without actually doing it, right? So there are many, many ideas that I have. So yeah, integrating AI within the various businesses is something that we're 100% looking at. And I think, you know, as I get older, I mean, I'm just realizing more and more the importance that I feel towards impacting people's lives and becoming a better person myself and just having that ethos with everything I do.
Well, that was an episode with Ananya Bidla on Mastermind 2023, the Women Leaders Special. It's powered by Nucleus Office Parks. It comes to you week after week on 94.3 Radio 1. There's never been a better time than now for gender diversity and inclusion, and ladies like Ananya are at the forefront of this change and movement. And we will keep bringing you dynamic ladies who power their companies, handling crucial roles, driving growth, as well as value for employees and partners. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. It was a lot of fun. Yeah, it was not music, but it was really fun.
Yeah, and see you soon with the music.
Yes, absolutely.
Was from Mastermind 2023, the Women Leaders Special, powered by Nucleus Office Parks. 94.3 Radio 1. One World, your station.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.